You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It wasn't that long ago that market participants had convinced themselves that interest rates were going to fall in the United States and Europe and other countries, and that's because inflation was under control and everything seemed quite rosy in the garden, almost like a Goldilocks scenario. Stocks consistently in the United States, for example, went to all-time record highs on a regular basis. Bond yields fell. I think the US 10-year went to something like 3.7% at one stage, and everyone was happy. And then suddenly, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, everything has been turned on its head. Bond yields have risen almost 100 basis points using the US 10-year as a guide, and stock markets are looking a little less than stable. What has happened? Why have the muddied waters suddenly washed over us? With me is John Stopford, who's head of multi-asset income at 91 in London. Quite a turnaround, John.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you need to take all of these things with a small pinch of salt. And I think the Federal Reserve and others do as well. You know, we are trying to, or the world is trying to understand the direction of economies, inflation, because they essentially are what they're guided by when they set interest rates, set monetary policy. And they're inherently noisy, and trying to spot the signal from the noise, I think, is quite tricky. So whether you put a lot of weight or only a small amount of weight on some of the recent data can make a big difference in terms of how you see the likelihood of prospective rate cuts in the US. And then obviously you've got sort of other dynamics going on elsewhere and what that might mean for interest rates in places like Europe, UK, Australia, New Zealand, and so on.
Let me read you something from Bloomberg from today. Mary Daly, president of the San Francisco Federal Reserve, reiterated the view that there is no urgency to cut rates, her words, given the solid economic growth, robust labor market, and stubborn inflation in the US. UBS say strategists even think the Fed hiking rates further is a real risk. That's a bit outlandish, isn't it?
Well, it's not impossible. I think it's still not likely, and we can talk about why. I mean, I think one of the biggest issues for the Fed is they are trying to set policy which has implications on for future growth and inflation based on the past. And the action they take takes time to work. So it inevitably means that it's a very inexact science that they are reacting to recent events, and to some extent they're bound to get it wrong one way or the other. So it's a sort of slightly problematic approach to life. Mary Daly is looking at the recent data. Recent data is relatively firm, or pretty firm, in terms of growth, and inflation has sort of been a little bit disappointing over the last 3 months. And on the basis of that, she's saying there's no hurry. And I think given the tools they have, given the data they have, that's a reasonable approach. I do think that they would like to cut interest rates if things return to the path that they're expecting and the one that they forecast, which is essentially lower inflation and some modest softening, or at least not an acceleration in growth. If it turns out that inflation actually is going to remain much stickier and growth is going to remain much further, then yes, you can't in the future rule out higher rates. But I think if you're looking at probabilities, the market is probably beginning to get overly excited about recent data and putting too much weight on it. And the truth is probably somewhere between where they thought they were 3 to 6 months ago and where the latest data suggests things are now. I think the reality is somewhere in between.
Do you think that market participants got ahead of themselves and pushed the markets, as I described in my introduction, to new record highs, equity markets that is, and now they're overreacting on the downside? Or is it coming back to a more reasonable level?
I think the recent correction, or the last few days, it's a bit too early to conclude that that's necessarily over. I do think inherently markets tend to overshoot and undershoot. People jump on board, momentum. People feel comfortable when things are going in the direction they're positioned for, and so they add more. And then when things get overly extended, there are lots of people who are too long or too short, feeling suddenly very uncomfortable because the price action is moving against them, and they're all trying to get out at the same time. It does seem as though there is a lot of good news priced in terms of equity markets. So we've seen a very big rise in equities over the last sort of 12 months or so, or longer, 18 months. A lot of that has been driven by valuations rather than actual earnings. So there's a lot of forward-looking optimism priced in, and certainly things like surveys of positioning and sentiment suggest that, you know, most people are positioned bullishly. So any news that sort of creates some uncertainty in either direction potentially leaves the market vulnerable. So we wouldn't be surprised, I think, to see a bit more of a setback to shake out some of that excess before equity markets start to march higher again.
Does politics play a role, particularly in the United States? We've got an election coming up in November. Is there any chance in a fantasy world where President Biden phones up Chairman Powell and says, listen, throw us a couple of bones, please. I need interest rates to come down. I need people to think that they're doing better because prices are not rising as fast as they were and their credit card bill comes down.
I mean, it's difficult to say how much sort of political thinking goes into Fed policy. I think they tend to suggest that they're apolitical, but, you know, they may or may not be. You know, they clearly wanted to cut interest rates, and that would potentially be helpful, I guess, for the incumbent president. And as we know, Donald Trump is someone who creates a certain amount of chaos. I mean, politics generally, you could argue, policy has definitely been one of the sort of things that's been driving some of the extraordinary outcomes we've seen in recent years. So all of the money spent to keep the economy on the road during the pandemic, that was probably overdone and explains some of the post-pandemic strength. There's obviously been a lot of spending generally. Fiscal policy has been relatively expansionary for a while, and that's added to that. You then got sort of other types of policy like, you know, trade policy or geopolitical policy, which potentially is encouraging manufacturing to move back to countries like the US, for example, with tax incentives behind that to try and encourage that. That's, again, a sort of policy action. I think maybe the takeaway is there's less of a clear separation anymore between governments and central banks. So governments have been, to some extent, using their balance sheets to sort of smooth the journey or to try and force interest rates to do what they would like, at the same time that governments have been expanding their borrowing. And so there's no longer as clear a divide between the two, and whether they're actually even going beyond that and trying to use policy to affect the political outcome, we'll have to wait and see. I do think Yellen, who's the Treasury Secretary, who was chair of the Federal Reserve, she does have some levers she can pull. So the balance sheet of the Treasury, the amount of cash the Treasury sits on, she can push up and down, or at least she can encourage her Treasury officials to push up and down. And that can, I think, have an influence on how much, you know, available money there is in the market, how much liquidity there is. And there has, I think, been some suggestion that the manipulation of that has to some extent offset QT, for example, so quantitative tightening. So, you know, the Fed's been, in theory, tightening on one side and the government's been loosening on the other, and the net effect has potentially remained relatively stimulative, for at least for financial markets.
That's a nice little link, that, because you've mentioned Janet Yellen. She's recently visited China. Chinese economic growth numbers came out surprising to the upside this morning. Japan's going in completely the opposite direction. It's raising rates. The ECB's, or rather the Eurozone's, inflation, I think the last print was something like 2.4%, which was better than expected. Do you think, let's start with the ECB, will they cut first, do you think?
It looks increasingly like that's the case. I mean, you know, as Mary Daly said, that the Fed, to some extent, can afford to wait. Growth is good. Inflation has been a little bit disappointing recently. So I think expectations of rate cuts, unless we get some data quickly in the opposite direction, are, you know, the expectation is rate cuts are sort of delayed until the second half of the year, whereas inflation is sort of broadly on course in Europe. And Europe has sort of been flirting with recessionary, or at least certainly weak, growth. The same in the UK. I think most developed economies outside of Japan and the US are, you know, seeing poor growth and declining inflation, and view their policy as tight, and so are looking for opportunities to cut. Clearly, if they cut well in advance of the US, the risk then is that That just leads to their currencies weakening against the dollar. And so I think they will be slightly cautious about how quickly or how far they diverge from US policy. But ultimately, you know, I think Christine Lagarde, the ECB president, said we're not the 51st state. We make policy on the basis of what suits Europe, not in reflection of what the Fed are doing. So, yeah, I think it's nuanced, but I do think that there's scope for other central banks to cut interest rates ahead of the US, even if the US remains on hold for somewhat longer, or possibly even, you know, thinks about going the other way at some point if the data continues to misbehave. China doesn't look like it's eased enough yet. The data was a bit better than expected, but most of the sort of current momentum in data is weakening again. And then Japan, you know, has had super loose policy for so long that maybe it is beginning to get to a point where inflation is normalizing. And so, you know, potentially there's scope for gradual normalization there. So everyone is to some extent adopting policy that suits them, but they also have to keep half an eye on what it means for their currency, what it means for where they sit relative to everyone else, as well as what they need to do absolutely.
Mm. And Japan, of course, is faced with a currency that's been sliding for so long now. In a way, it's even though the wages are rising quite quickly, it's trying to defend that currency, I would imagine, in the back of its mind. Anyway, final question, John. Has very recent results affected your ideas on strategy for 2024?
To an extent, I think. I think we have become incrementally more cautious about chasing the rally in some of the more cyclical parts of the economy. So equities to some extent, but particularly corporate bonds, where the risk premium they pay over governments just looks ludicrously limited. So they're just not being paid any incentive to lend to a company rather than government. I think we're focusing our sort of more constructive bond market views on economies where we've got greater confidence that inflation and growth are moving in the right direction, or at least they're not threatening the potential for rate cuts through this year into next year. And I think if the sell-off in treasuries continues, it's probably a pretty good buying opportunity there too, because I do think that the market is in danger of extrapolating a few recent data points and, you know, they probably exaggerate the extent to which growth momentum is picking up in the US and the extent to which inflation is not coming down. We think there are a lot of leading indicators on things like wages and rents and other things, which suggest that ultimately inflation can probably converge towards the Fed's target over the next 12 months or so.
John, thanks so much for your insight. John Stopford is head of multi-asset income at 91 in London. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.